We are at the American Feminist Conference. I am a woman, just so everyone knows. And I am fighting for the choice to abort my child.
Hi, it's so nice to meet you at this feminist conference. What brings you here?
I want to abort children. My children. I want the freedom to do this.
I thought this was a feminist conference.
It is. And that's, we're fighting for our bodily autonomy.
I mean, I came here from Afghanistan. I'm fighting for feminism as well, but it's more so to be able to leave my house without a chaperone and to go to school and to purchase things and to be married through choice.
Sorry, you said you're from whereabouts?
Afghanistan.
So you don't live in America?
No.
Oh, well then I don't care about you at all. I am a real feminist in America, and I'm fighting for the ability to abort my child.
Is there any right that you don't get to
Shut
exercise?
Up. I don't care what you have to say. Yes, the patriarchy is oppressing me all over my body.
I don't think you know what true patriarchy is.
Oh, I do. I was at the grocery store yesterday, and a man walked ahead in front of me and opened the revolving door before me, thinking that I couldn't do it myself.
Did you go to the grocery store by yourself?
Yes.
Did you drive there?
Yeah.
Are you married in a forced marriage?
No, I am a cool aunt.
I don't understand where the oppression is, man.
Live, laugh, love. That's what I do.
And scene, ladies and gentlemen. Wow. The acting skills from Will Witt are just, oof. I guess Wilhelmina Witt.
They are good. I am good at acting.
Wilhelmina Witt, I guess, in this case.
I got told the other day I could be an actor.
Who told you that?
Don't worry about it.
He's like, my mom.
Yeah, my grandma.
And even I know your mom would not say that. And she's going to text you after this and say your acting is horrible.
I do. She probably is. She usually does.
Well, guys, before we get into the show today, I'm going to talk about a few of the things that we're going to get into. And that is westernized feminism versus feminism in countries like the Middle East, in Afghanistan, and what they're currently experiencing right now with their feminist movement. We're also going to be talking about Throwback Thursday, which is my segment today. I'll keep that as a surprise. What am I going to get to? I don't know. And we're also talking about Australia's new sort of social credit score that is creeping into their society. But today we have a special guest. And that is Erica Jimenez from EV Magazine. Hi, Erica.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
We're great. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited to be here with you guys.
Yeah, so without further ado, let's just get right into the subject matter at hand. So you are the managing editor of EV Magazine, which is a new project for most people. I'm sure a lot of you listening have probably not heard of EV Magazine. Erica, what is it?
Okay, so EV was founded in 2019. We are a women's magazine that goes against a lot of the mainstream narratives that, you know, we see in women's media today, which if you're just a normal woman, might not be your cup of tea.
Right.
And that spans everywhere from, you know, being pro-socialism and communism to encouraging women to cheat on their spouses because it is empowering, to what is considered a, like, you know, like dating culture, hooking up with people, like everything. And so we're here to kind of rewrite that narrative and come back for women who are, you know, I mean, we say traditional values, but to me, it's just normal women who want to date a nice guy and get married and have a life that they enjoy. So,
and so you just are about to release the first edition, right?
So we've been a digital magazine for 2 years, and we had never planned on doing a print edition before, but our readers, like, we get emails and messages like every day for 2 years asking for it. And so finally we decided this summer we were just going to dive in and, yeah, release our first print version, which is super exciting. It's 200 pages long.
It's 200 pages?
It's 200 pages. There are no ads, so it's all content, unlike a lot of, you know, print magazines that people are used to getting where they have to flip through 30 pages of ads to get to the table of contents. And inside, we have, like, some really exciting stuff. So we have interviews with Gina Carano from The Mandalorian, Demi Tebow, who is Tim Tebow's wife, and she talks about her fight against sex trafficking with her husband, and our cover model, Kate Bock, who is fabulous.
200 pages. That's not a that's a Dostoevsky novel.
Yeah, it's a coffee table book.
Yeah, and it's really beautiful. Like, we put so much, you know, love and attention into it, and I'm proud to say that not just the articles are fabulous, but the photos are quite fabulous as
How do you fill 200 pages up with stuff about women?
You find really cool women to talk to and have them write, and then you ask them to send you their best ideas.
Right. They do exist, Will, and they do write, and they do speak. And
I don't believe it. Wait, are all the articles and everything written by women?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's no...
I don't think we have anything written by men on EDU. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, we... Well, we're a women's publication for women by women.
Right,
so.
Right. Okay, that's a good... That's good.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, I would... Listen, I would still read it.
Well, I'm sure you would. You should. I'm sure you maybe would.
I would look for the pictures.
I mean, there might be some articles you won't be that into, but there.
Tell me an article I wouldn't be into.
Oh my gosh! Like 15 reasons why you want to wear dresses more. I don't think you want to wear dresses more.
Listen. I'm trying to get in touch with that side of myself.
I mean, the left is trying to get you in touch with that side. There seems to be quite a big campaign for that.
I know. Well, listen, if that's what EV Magazine tells me to do, I will listen to their advice.
Well, actually, what we say is that we like masculinity, so we would encourage you to put on a suit.
Okay, yes. So what is some of the articles that you think I would like? Or for many of the other people in the audience who are listening right now who are men, we do have lots of men who watch, what would you say are articles that they would appreciate out of this, too?
Oh, well, of course, you're going to love our interview with Gina Carano, who's a badass and, mm-hmm. you know, used to be an MMA fighter and then now has been successful in Hollywood and beyond just, you know, pretending to be a strong woman on screen. She actually is a strong woman in real life. And her interview is super interesting. And, you know, the photos look fabulous, too.
They do look fabulous. I saw them all over her Instagram and everything promoting it. She looked great.
Yeah.
The whole thing looks great. It looks like a really great, like an actual print magazine.
Yeah.
Like it's well done.
I think you guys are going to be really impressed. Yeah. Yeah. I'm like so excited.
Yeah.
Well, I want to go through the site here for just a moment and scroll through so you guys can take a look at what EV Print is actually going to look like. And you can go to evprint.com if you want to check it out. Place your little pre-order. As you can see, it's so covered up that you can't see what the cover is yet. but you can go and place your orders there. I think you're filling a void that women don't have right now in their entertainment, in their media, and definitely not when it comes to beauty and magazines. So I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well,
what void do you feel like you're really filling? What is the purpose of this? Because many people make magazines for women, but why this magazine?
Well, we've actually done a lot of research on what women want in their media, and contrary to what is being put forth in a lot of other major women's magazines, women don't actually like hyper-feminist narratives. They don't really want politics in with their beauty, and most women are not into like these fringe sexual behaviors. They want love. They want marriage. They want, you know, kind of old-fashioned love, and they like being women. They like being feminine, and that is, you know, and every study says this is, like, true across many countries, especially in other countries, but, like, even in the U.S., it's not nearly as far gone as I think a lot of people want to believe. And so Evie is filling in that void of, like, just content that people can enjoy without having radicalism shoved down their throat. And appreciating women for how beautiful we are instead of trying to change us into something else.
But is it because of this and because of saying that I'm not going to align myself with the radical agenda, does it in turn make it so that you guys are the radicals? Have you been accused of that? Because I would say that like when women come out and say, oh, we support real feminism, we support, you know, women in this different light than the mainstream narrative, then you get called the radical. Like, oh, I love my family. Oh, yeah. I love my marriage.
Honestly, we get less hate from feminists. We actually get the most amount of hate from like the Twitter MGTOWs.
Makes total sense.
It's actually really funny because we're so pro like classic masculinity. Like we just get attacked constantly as, you know, being like attacking men and having unrealistic expectations. And anyway, it's kind of weird because like if you like men, you know, we constantly write about how we like men, you know, we like masculine men, and yet we get most of the hate from men. I think feminists just like ignore us. They like, I don't know. Every once in a while we write something really spicy and then, you know, something. People get upset. But for the most part, it's actually really funny because it's mostly men. And we're like, why are you coming at us? Like, you don't go after, like, other magazines that are way more offensive against men. You come after us. I think they're hoping that we'll, like, take pity on them and listen. But,
Yeah.
No. Sorry.
What are the standards that they don't like that you profess?
I'm sure the marriage part for MGTOW does not sound very good.
They think that marriage is like terrible for men. Oh, my personal favorite is that, you know, it's like on the one hand, any woman who is like, you know, not a virgin is like a terrible person. But also, like, if she doesn't put out on the first date, then like, why am I even wasting my time? And I'm like, I don't understand how those can both be true at the same time. Like, pick.
There are so many unique people in our society.
I know.
Yes, there are many people with many unique perspectives. Yes. Yes. That is for sure.
Like,
that,
they get offended with the idea that men should, like, take women on a date. And I don't really know how that became the big topic, but there we are.
Why is that offensive? That's a great thing.
offensive to think that you should...
No, I'm saying, why is that offensive?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm glad that you're asking that.
I don't know. They claim, like, women are taking advantage of them.
You're familiar
with MGTOW.
Listen,
I think some women could take advantage of some men.
Yeah, but there are
sure,
plenty of men doing it to women, too. So,
right,
you know,
no,
I'm
it's across the board.
Yeah.
Both sexes, and there are only two, need to be better with each other.
Treat each other better. And, I mean, that's what we encourage is, like, how to treat people respectfully, like, how to, you know, be a better, kinder, more sophisticated person who, you know, has good manners and treats other people nicely, but can stand up for themselves in a way that's productive. You know, all that boring stuff that actually matters.
What you tell women is like their standard of like, here's how you be against the mainstream and a strong 21st century woman. What are the tips that you tell them?
Oh, well, I mean, of course, like, I think for the number one thing is learning to be assertive in the right way, because there's a lot of bad narratives on both sides about, like, on the one hand, you have the trad wife thing where you should just be so submissive to your husband and never question anything. And then on the other hand is feminism, which tells you to basically just fight with men all the time for absolutely no reason because they're men. And neither of those are productive or helpful. So, you know, learning how to be assertive and stand up for yourself, especially if you want to have a good marriage, you know, you don't want to go into the dating world where you're just a pushover and you take whatever is given to you. Like, you need to learn how to set boundaries. And so I think that's like number one. And number two is don't pursue a career at the cost of your personal life. You know, that's another, I worked in fashion for many years and I saw that firsthand, women who were very focused on their career and kind of had disdain for women that, like me, who really wanted to get married.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, like, getting married is an equally important goal to having a great career. And that's not really considered popular to say anymore. But, you know, if you're talking to a woman in her early 20s, like, I would tell her, you know, as much energy as you put into writing the perfect resume and finding this amazing job and having all these accomplishments, which are super important, you should put the same amount of effort into finding a great life partner so that you like your life, you know, when you go home at night. So,
yeah, you don't want to be 35 alone with cats.
I mean, cats are pretty cute, but being alone, even men don't, that's like a man being alone with his dog. It's depressing.
Yeah. No, yes. No, oh my
it's
goodness.
Very much
no.
Similar.
No.
It's very,
no,
you're
because
alone
a dog,
at 35
no,
with an
stop.
Animal.
This is ridiculous. A dog loves you.
We found the button and we pressed it.
A dog loves
happened.
You. A cat does not love you the way that a dog
I
loves you.
I understand that it's a little bit different, but it's also you, 35, alone in your house with a pet. So I'm
not
just
saying
gonna
it's
say.
The best thing, but I am saying
a dog won't make you dinner the way that like a loving wife will.
Exactly.
No, but
and they can't give
dog,
you a back rub.
A dog won't nag. So there's differences.
Gosh. I don't nag.
I don't
Erica's
think you do.
Like, I'm regretting this podcast appearance immediately.
I just love dogs. I'm just a big dog fan.
You, I if can you have, tell.
You
because
can have cats too. But
the second that you,
you
say anything
too.
That goes against Will's love for dogs, he's up in arms.
I'll be very defensive.
Maybe a guy in his 30s with cats has like bigger problems than the fact that he's single.
100%.
Right.
That's
yeah, 100%.
Exactly.
That's what my
exactly
that
right.
was my implication.
Okay, so going back to the beginning of what our opening skit was, we were talking about feminism in general, and we're talking about people in America right now who are coming and saying, oh my goodness, I'm so oppressed as a woman. This America and the patriarchy, it is so against me. When in reality, we have people in Afghanistan right now. We can play this first video from Afghanistan if we want, Tyler
yeah,
Ramla.
Yeah, we've got two videos to show you guys and sort of compare. Compare the struggles here and you tell me who's really struggling. This one's out of Afghanistan.
Now, obviously, you guys don't know what they're saying. I'm assuming you don't speak this language.
But these are women outside in their hijabs with signs fighting for the roles that they have in their society prior to the Taliban taking over their government. So being able to go to school, being able to have a job, being able to leave their house without being chaperoned, you know, just free choice and free rights. And this is the video out of America. So that is women chanting, "Bans off our bodies, my body is my own," in their fight for abortion rights. So what do we think about these two things existing on the same plane?
I bet all of those women in the America video are pro-vaccine mandate.
I mean, you wouldn't surprise me. Yeah. No, well, not at all.
Of course, they're outside with masks on. Of course they are.
Yeah, but those things tend to go hand in hand.
Yeah, but Erica, what do you think?
Well, it's not to denigrate the idea that there are still issues that women are fighting for in America. I mean, obviously, nowhere is perfect, and there's plenty of problems in America. I don't know mm-hmm. about those specific women mm-hmm. And their particular problems, but this is an ongoing issue, which we actually write about a lot at EV, because feminists in America completely turn a blind eye to what happens in the Middle East, and they've been doing it for decades, because... You know, if you bring up, for example, not to get dark, but female genital mutilation, like that is just, nobody will talk about that mm-hmm. in the United States, even though it's probably one of the most horrific things that happens to women, or child slavery, or, you know, the fact that in other countries where abortion is legal, in third world countries, there's so much discrimination against women that they actually have female baby shortages because female babies are aborted at higher rates than male babies.
Right.
And they struggle with that in a lot of different countries. And I don't really hear women in America ever talk about that, even though the lives of a woman in Afghanistan matters just as much as the life of a woman in America.
Exactly. So.
Well, it's happening very far away to them. So it's not something that they need to worry about. They're so vain and encircled in their own world and their own problems that they've created that they don't want to look at the rest of the world. They don't want to have to actually have to do any real work. It's the same with, like, you know, all the BLM stuff and things that happen. Mm-hmm. You have, like, white college kids posting black squares thinking that they're solving racism. It's like you're not doing anything. The world in America is not the way that you think it is. But across the world, there is real racism. There is real discrimination. And there's real acts being put against women that are horrible. Right?
Well, but I think it's like there's, like, a combination between they're afraid to speak out against it because of the desire to, you know, say, oh, that's their culture, so I'm not allowed to talk about that, because they don't want to offend people's culture. I don't really think culture is an excuse for atrocities.
Mm-hmm.
That's just me. And then the other thing is that, you know, it's kind of hard to complain about a guy, like, saying something rude to you at a work meeting when other women are worried about getting murdered. So, you know, those problems make theirs look, like, kind of small. And so I think it's, like, a combination of those two things.
Yeah, the left has stood at the forefront and at the center and said, well, we accept the Islamist religion, we accept their culture, and you truly don't, and that's why you don't speak about what's happening right now in Afghanistan. That's why you don't speak about what happens with Islamists, especially jihadists and fundamental Islamists. And they've stated, oh, well, we accept you. We accept exactly what you are. We accept everything that comes along with that. So instead of saying, you know, I accept the religion itself, but don't accept the things that you do in the name of it, or I don't accept this part of your culture, they can't do that, because if you don't subscribe to all parts of leftism, you don't subscribe to leftism at all. So they feel no pressure to defend their statement. The statement was made that they tolerate it, and that's it.
That's exactly right.
So it's just crazy to see that women right here today are fighting over, you know, the rights to abort a child through which they went through the choices to become pregnant. And that's their main fight. That is their feminist battle. And these women are going to grow up, and I'm assuming having children, although they're fighting for the exact opposite. And they're going to teach their children that they were the revolutionaries. They were the ones fighting for women's rights. They were the ones fighting for equalizing men and women in the society, when that is certainly not the case, while ultimately turning a blind eye to all the atrocities that are happening to women abroad and not accepting the true freedom and privilege that they have to live in this country.
Yeah, not sure if those women are going to be having many children, but you know.
You see, I find that a lot of the women who tend to be super modern day feminist and super pro-choice, they do end up having children. And oftentimes they're the ones here who are holding picket signs and fighting for their choice are saying, well, I'm pro-choice, but I would never do it. And I still want to have children eventually. And women naturally feel that biological incentive to have children. So most of these women who are fighting for your right to have an abortion, maybe they've had an abortion in the past, maybe they will in the future, but they will most likely have children.
It's tough because I feel like, I mean, you can even look at this in experiments with animals, like experiments with rats. It's like if you give rats drugs, they're going to go away from their biological instincts and go towards the drugs. They would rather have cocaine than food or water in some cases. Mm-hmm. So when you have all these dopamine hits that are happening with leftists living in America, dopamine hits from their virtue signaling and their vanity through doing these leftist causes through their religion, then it almost makes them abandon their own human nature and their own biology. So I think there is a way to destroy the biology and instinctual nature that we have as humans when you have enough positive, quote unquote, positive reinforcement from leftism.
Oh, agreed. Yeah. And we do see that birth rates are dropping. But at the rate that we are at now, still a large portion of those women in these videos are going to have kids and they're going to spend
Well,
the tragedy of feminism is that it's done a very good job of convincing women that their natural biological urge to have children is evil and somehow a product of the patriarchy. And I can't think of anything more evil to tell people because your parents had you. They loved you enough to have you, and you and your children deserve to be loved enough by their parents. So I, you know, that's a really big issue with how women even like perceive motherhood or moving into that new part of their life. Is it, you know, a really amazing experience, or is it this burden that they're giving up their individuality? You know, that's how feminists always paint motherhood, and I think that's a tragedy.
It is a tragedy.
And and the other thing is that they've taken the conversation from learning, you know, we have all of this technology and all this knowledge about how women's bodies work, and we've turned it into a conversation about taking care of pregnancies after they already happen instead of teaching women and empowering women on how to make good choices before pregnancies happen, because obviously most pregnancies are accidents that end up, you know, women end up wanting to get an abortion for. They're accidents. They're not the product of rape.
Right.
So that, like you said, is a series of choices that women make. Why are we not spending more time educating women about how their bodies work, how to use birth control effectively? Like that to me is much more empowering than, you know, trying to fix a problem after it's already happened.
Right. You're fighting for choice. You have the choice.
Yeah.
You have the choice not to have reckless sex.
And it's also just better for you psychologically and physically to not get pregnant if you don't want to. So that seems like an obvious solution.
We've gone against to follow the science. That's what the left says. Right. Follow the science. But then when it comes to basic biology, they're nowhere to be found.
Yeah. It's just tragic. And we're going against any biological sign that we have as women and as men, and we are just going against that grain for the sake of what? And it doesn't spare you the sadness and the sorrow that you will feel 20, 30 odd years down the line when either A, you don't have children, you went through an abortion, or you do and you realize that you fought for this narrative for however long, going against what is actually true to who you are as a woman or as a man. So yeah. It's a problem.
Right. Listen, you guys know more about it than I do. You are women.
Just a little bit more.
Well, you should know, too. You will want to marry a woman one day, so you might want to understand
it. Who says I don't want to marry someone now, Erica?
Wow. I wish you will.
I think it'll still be a woman.
No, it will be a woman. Yeah, it won't be my dog. So, as much as I love him.
Rocky, where you at?
Hey, buddy. No. Thinking about you. No, I will not be marrying my dog.
I would hope so.
Yeah,
I would
hope he's a good boy. But not that good.
Now we're going to get into a new phenomenon that is creeping up in Australia, and that is the social credit score. I'm going to show you guys a video. It's wild. It's crazy.
Before we get into this, let's thank Erica for being on the show today and for coming on and talking about Evie Magazine and everything. We really appreciate it, Erica.
Yes, we do.
You guys can make sure that you can find her magazine at evieprint.com. Mm-hmm. It's in the caption of this post, so you can go to the caption on this and look, and Tyler's probably also going to drop it in the comments right now so you can see it. Thank you, intern Tyler. And make sure you check it out because it's really important. And as a young man living in Los Angeles, I see what feminism has done to many women, and I've seen what it's done to men too, because men act in a different way when women act a certain way. So it's all connected. It's a good thing for men and for women to have great pieces of publication out like this, like Evie Magazine. So definitely go check it out, evieprint.com. Erica, we really appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, Will.
Yeah.
See you guys later.
Thank you. Now, let's get over to Australia. Here's a crazy video with their news talking about social credit scores. This seems to be a new development in what has been a crazy ride, a crazy roller coaster with Australia so far, and it's only getting worse. Here we go.
A radical plan to crack down on social media abuse is being considered by the federal government. For more Nine's Oliver Haig joins us live in Adelaide. Ollie, how will it work?
Layla, good morning. Essentially, it will work the same as a passport. Australians forced to submit 100 points of identification, like their driver's license or passport, when using social media accounts like Facebook and Twitter. Now, police would have access to those social media accounts, and it's all part of a crackdown on online abuse. Now, users could be liable for defamation suits or even criminal prosecution, and it's all part of a plan hoping to deter people from engaging in bad behaviour. Now, the recommendations were handed down by a federal parliamentary inquiry. They're reforms that are being considered by the Morrison government, with the chairman saying there is merit to remove the veil of being anonymous. Layla?
Crazy. So
wise you might.
They're fighting to remove anonymity from the Australian internet in an effort to hold people accountable for what they deem to be social attacks. Now, on paper, I'm sure to many of you, you go, oh, well, it'd be nice to know who this anonymous person is who comments hate messages or calls me fat on the internet. And in theory,
I know who you are. I know who you are.
I know who you are.
I will find you.
And in theory, that's great. And that's how they sell people on it. But what they're not telling you, what they fail to tell you, is that now, through these sorts of rules, the Australian government gets to deem what is a social attack. They get to deem what is proper and improper use of language. And do you truly want your government to be in control of such a standard? I don't.
Yeah, who gets to be the arbiter of truth when it comes to determining what hate speech is and what freedom of speech is? Like, you could go up to someone and you could say something wildly leftist, and that's not hate speech, but then you go and say something wildly conservative, and that is hate speech. And these same people on the left who would say, who would applaud something like this and say, yes, let's get those extremists and the people talking bad about the government and the lockdowns and all that, and say that we need to silence them. Well, what if it was the other side in charge?
Right.
They wouldn't want that to happen either. That is why everyone's freedom of speech is pinnacle to having a republic that can stand, a society that will still work. Because if everyone isn't allowed to say what they have to say, then the worst ideas will be the only ones rising to the top.
Yeah, it's just a really sad thing to see how Australia is going. But we mustn't forget that oftentimes what happens in the world is a reflection of what's happening in our own countries. And a lot of people, I get a lot of comments saying, well, how did America get so woke in comparison to all these other countries? And to that I say, just look around. I mean, this is happening in Canada. It is happening in Western Europe. It is happening in Australia. It is happening everywhere. This woke ideology is just creeping in. And it's going to become an infringement on your speech, because that's what they run on. They run on not only having their speech be so loud and just shroud the entire internet, your media, everything that you're seeing, to become the dominant figure in your mind, but they also run on crushing dissidents and just wiping away anybody who goes against the narrative that they have to put forth. So while this may sound great on paper, nobody gets to be anonymous. Nobody gets to abuse the system that is the internet to be hateful or to spout abuse or hate speech. Who gets to decide what is hateful abuse? What is hate speech? What is an internet attack? Because right now, I know that if this sort of law was instated in America, it would mean that people like Will and I would not be able to speak.
I would say the things you say to me off camera, hate speech. And they should be illegal.
For the record, I am very nice to Will off camera. I think Will is far more mean to me off camera.
I am not mean to you off camera. I am so nice to you.
We're both nice to each other.
Tell them I'm nice to you. Or face my wrath.
Let's just go with the narrative that Will and I are both nice to each other all the time.
Right. No, it's like the scene in Anchorman. You seen that movie?
I did, but I don't remember it.
You seen it, Tyler? Yeah, the scene in Anchorman where Will Ferrell and the blonde reporter chick, and they're like, they have to do the show together really nice, but then as the show ends and they're like looking at each other, they're just like cursing each other out and saying horrible things when no one can hear them anymore. No, that's Will like what I, it's like. It's
we still like each other off camera. So
no, we she does. Read the thing out of Australia before I get really mad.
Moving on. This is a tweet from Siraj Hashmi. This is out of The Atlantic. Here's a paragraph from this article. Interstate travel within Australia is also severely restricted, and the government of South Australia, one of the country's six states, Develop is now testing an app as Orwellian as any in the free world to enforce its quarantine rules. People in South Australia will be forced to download an app that combines facial recognition and geolocation. The state will text them at random times, and thereafter they will have 15 minutes to take a picture of their face in the location where they are supposed to be. Should they fail, the local police department will be sent to follow up in person. We don't tell them how often or when, on a random basis, they have to reply within 15 minutes, Premier Stephen Marshall explained. I think every South Australian should feel pretty proud that we are the national pilot for the home-based quarantine app.
Yeah. Mate, feeling pretty proud right now. Yeah, mate. Yeah, proud.
Well, I'll tell you. Right. You're not there. 15 minutes, man.
Oh, wait, mate. Got to... All right. Send it to me, Govy.
Oh, my gosh. This is wild. This is so...
Well, the thing that's crazy about this is, like, we've been covering on the show and just everyone else on the news in general and conservative media has been covering what's been happening in Australia for at least the past, what, month?
Yeah.
Heavily month is
just
when
about.
Things started to really pick up.
Right.
And it's like people never thought that totalitarianism or this sort of tyranny could happen.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They didn't say that. They didn't think that any of this could happen. And even when everyone in America, every conservative voice essentially in America, bands together to say this is crazy and to talk about Australia in this way and say this is nuts, these people are nutcases for doing this, as Orwellian
right.
in 1984, it's still getting worse.
Yeah.
So it's like even the pressure from the media of the outside world is not doing anything to deter these people from having this type of tyranny.
What's terrifying to me is how fast it happens, too.
So fast.
It's like you blink your eyes and then you wake up and you realize, oh, my gosh, the government is taking control of everything that I once knew. And I found through the whole duration of this COVID-19 process, which is now, what, been 2 years? Guys, think about the fact that you blinked and it's now 2 years later and how much freedom you have given up to the government and your not only federal government, but your local governments, because now our lives are in their hands. And it's just crazy to me that you still have a group of people saying, well, this is totally okay. This is totally okay. Oh, well, what does it matter? And they'll use the argument, if you're not doing anything wrong, why should it matter to you? And again, who gets to dictate what it is to be wrong? It just doesn't make any sense anymore. And we've conditioned people so far, and people are so ready and willing to give up what they have always had, and that is freedom and liberty. And for what? For a safety and an uncautionary tale. I don't understand. I don't understand.
I love Big Brother. That's what we're getting to. Is that like that person in the article in this Atlantic piece that we read that snippet of said, you know, we should be proud of this. It reminds me of Winston in 1984 at that coffee shop after he has been abused and tortured by Big Brother, by the state, by the government. And he's in that coffee shop in the last, I'm pretty sure this is the last words of the book, or I love Big Brother. It's something similar along those lines. But it's like very real. Because it's like you get torn down so much and people tear you down and say, oh, this is good for you. This is really good for you. And you need to do this. And you don't know what's actually going on. You say eventually, I love Big Brother. And now people are saying, oh, I'm proud of this happening in my country. I'm proud to submit a selfie every 15 minutes showing that, you know, I'm on the toilet or wherever I'm supposed to be.
Yeah, and do you not see the sort of psychological gameplay that the government is playing with you right now, especially in Australia? It's like they beat you with a stick, and then they're like, here's a piece of candy. And you're like, oh my gosh, I love the government. And they beat you with a stick again, and then they're like, here's a piece of candy.
I love candy.
Yeah, right? And that's exactly what happened. We went through these COVID-19 lockdowns where we got beat with the stick, and our economy got shut down. Our kids weren't going to school. We weren't able to work. We weren't able to provide for our families. And they're like, oh. Here's a couple weeks where you get to go and do everything you need to do, and maybe not. You have to wear a mask, and then they beat you with a stick again, and they bring all of it back, but they do it so much worse the second time. It's like we are in a constant abusive relationship with our government, and every time they apologize and they go, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. We were just, you know, we don't know what love means. And you go, oh, that's totally fine. Let me come back to you. And then they beat you twice as hard.
Now they're beating you with a didgeridoo.
Now they're beating them with didgeridoos.
You know what that is?
Yes.
What is it?
That is an Australian instrument.
Yeah, it's like that big thing, right?
Yes, it's huge.
Yeah, it's kind of like a massive flute, I think. I don't know. I'm not Australian.
Anyways, back to my analogy. Do you guys know what happens in abusive relationships? Okay.
Never.
The woman is all submissive and she stays and she continues to come back. And eventually she just gets beaten to death. That's honestly what happens. And that's our relationship with the government now.
Jeez.
We're just waiting for them to beat us.
It could be the other way too.
What do you mean?
The woman could beat the man to death.
I mean, statistically, I don't know how common that is in terms of men getting beaten to death by women. I'd have to look up the numbers on that.
Or complains to him to death.
Right, right. Maybe that's the case.
No, women are great.
But no, we're in this endless, horrible, cyclical relationship with our government. And so many people are fine and complacent in being there. And so much so that they don't even recognize that they are there, which is the scary part of abusive relationships. You not knowing that you're in one. So I guess that's the goal of this podcast.
It's conditioning. I mean, it's conditioning. You get so used to something that you don't know the difference anymore.
Yep.
Again, just like 1984, where he gets beat by his government. He doesn't know the difference anymore. And at the end of the novel, he loves Big Brother.
Yeah.
Even though he had his own free thoughts and he was writing in a diary and, you know, fell in love with a woman and was doing all these things. But eventually, you know, you just get torn down.
Yep.
And you give up your own and you're willing to do whatever for your own sanity.
Yep. It just all becomes a blur. And then the person who controls everything around you is the one that you turn to. And right now, that is our government. And poor Australia. But also, you Australians did set yourself up for this. And unfortunately, I think it's something that humans naturally set themselves up for. So while we're watching this happen in Australia and in Western Europe, you can know full well that it's probably going to come here, or at least attempt to come here. And if you guys are not out there at the forefront fighting for your rights, fighting for your values, fighting for your freedom, going to lose it.
But we can be very happy about one thing. There's been some white pills this week. Which has been good. Do you know what that means?
Yes. Okay. Is that when you were previously on a side and then you...
No, so a black pill, like if you're black pilled, that means you kind of feel nihilistic.
You're nihilist. You're done.
Yeah, and a white pill is like the opposite. It's like, wow, this was great.
I didn't realize that was... Okay.
Yeah. Sure. So it's like a good thing. No, white pills are a good thing.
Okay.
Like we had the Texas abortion ban, and then we had in California now, they are basically holding off on vaccine mandates for the entire state. And I think a lot of that is because... people came out to the events that I spoke at Amala Sangha One, and you guys came out to that, and we protested. We made our voices heard.
Yeah.
I genuinely think that part of it is because we actually went out there and did something about it. So there are things that you can do. You feel like you can't do anything, but there is so much you can do. Don't let them break you. Do not let these people break you ever, okay? You have to stay strong and stay resilient and not be broken by anything.
Yeah, when you're standing on the sidelines, and this is in cases of anything in your life, really, when you're standing on the sidelines and thinking there's nothing I can do, there's always something you can do. And there is always 1,000 other people who are thinking the same thing and choosing to sit there and not do it. So be the one person that breaks through out of that 1,000 and actually goes and does it and set the example, because then those thousands of people are going to see that and they're going to go, wow, I thought that couldn't be done. I just watched somebody do it right in front of my face. Why don't I join them? And that's exactly what happens. That's how these rallies start. That's how people start fighting back. That's how legislative changes happens. That's how everything shifts. That's how the whole entire pendulum swings back, is by people getting up and doing what they think they can't. So there's a hopeful silver lining at the end of it.
I was talking to someone the other day about this, about being an extremist, you know, about extremism.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't calling me an extremist, but
luckily, they
were, you know, luckily, but they were getting close. Because of, you know, some of the things that we talk about on the show.
Okay.
And I was like, Rosa Parks was an extremist, you know?
Yeah.
Nelson Mandela was an extremist.
Yep.
Abraham Lincoln was an extremist.
Yep.
You know? I'm not saying that you should be going out there and looking to be an extremist. That's not what I'm saying.
No.
But I'm saying that people did very daring and brave things that during their lifetimes and in the history that they lived in would be called extremist people. But they did the right thing. They did the right thing despite having everyone think that they were some radical person for doing something like that. Harriet Tubman would have been an extremist. You know, lots of amazing people throughout history would have been labeled as extreme, crazy people. But they did the right thing. And history tells a story of people who did the right thing despite all odds.
It's so true. Yeah, even if you are not recognized for it now, you will be down the line. So just stick to your guns and do what's right. Now, before we get into the final segment, and that is Throwback Thursday, which I will be leading today, we have some super chats. This one is from Marcelino Gonzalez. Got a question for Will. How's it like having a roommate above your mouth and under your nose, taking up so much real estate and living rent free? LOL.
It actually doesn't live rent-free. It has to pay me to be here. So, but it's nice. It actually, you know, sometimes on those cold August nights in Los Angeles, my lip will get quite frigid. But having this makes me know it'll never happen again.
Wow, so really it's like an evolutionary trait to yourself that's really keeping you alive.
Well, I mean, it was, yeah.
Sustaining you.
No, it keeps you warm. It's like having body hair.
Yeah.
You know, it keeps you warm.
Yeah. Well, great. So, there's your question answered, Marcelino.
Question 100% answered. Perfectly. Like always.
Next one. YouTube Hates Facts says, inspiring philosophy mentions several studies where life actually begins at conception. Yeah, which, I mean, is the basis of the pro-life versus pro-choice debate. When does life begin?
And there is no debate. It is scientifically proven that it begins at conception. So if you can, this is exactly what I said yesterday. You need to get people to realize that at conception, it is a human life. That's like the first thing that you need to do before having the argument about anything else. Because if they don't think it's a life, then you can't be the conversation with them.
Yep.
It doesn't work.
Yeah, I got into a little back and forth on Twitter today of somebody saying, well, you can't push your beliefs on somebody. And I responded by saying, I'm not pushing beliefs on anybody. I'm pushing objective.
Was it a woman?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. I got a message today from some like makeup girl who had like 200,000 followers on Instagram. And she's like, why can't you just let people have their own beliefs? Why do you need to get into other people's business? And I said, you know, she was condescendingly rude. You know, the type of rude where it's like, okay, if you screenshotted this and showed people, they wouldn't think I'm like the worst person ever, but I can tell you were being rude.
Yeah.
You know? And so, and I was just like, yes, when it concerns the murder of another human, then it is my opinion. Then my opinion does matter. Right? As you have to come to this consensus that it is a life. It is not just someone making a choice. Like you're not telling someone they can't pop a pimple on their forehead as a part of their body. You're telling someone that they can't murder a child inside of them.
Yeah. And remember that really personal belief and personal truth, as the left would like to call it, is really just this concoction made up to get people out of arguments. Personal belief and personal truth have nothing to do with objective fact and objective truth. And if you can agree objectively when life begins, and that is at conception, then the argument is really moot. It's over. It's done with. And people don't want to concede that, and they will find any argument that they can to get out of it. Next one. Nathan Coldis. What's up, guys? Unvaxxed Pepe here on IG. Just asking what's up and thanks for all that you do. Thanks,
what's
Nathan.
Up, guys? This is Will Witt from PragerU. Today we're at Cal State LA asking people what they think of Pepe.
Wow. That was a really good intro.
Let's do it.
Is that the next man on the street?
That's the next man on the street.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you, Nathan.
Thank you, Nathan.
Inspiring the masses here.
Actually, I was talking to a friend yesterday and I got a good idea for another man on the street.
Okay, what is it?
Okay, you guys want to know?
Yeah. It's like Dora.
Yeah.
What's the next place on the map?
Where's the map? Okay, so here's the idea.
Okay.
I'm working with an organization. Don't have a name for it yet, but maybe people in the comments, you guys can tell me a name for the organization I'm working with. But what I do is I take Afghanistan refugees and I pair them with people in America. And so I am going around asking people on a college campus or somewhere in LA, and I ask them, I say, do you think that we should let more refugees into America? And they're going to say, yes.
Right.
And then I say, okay, well, I'm actually with this program where we're housing refugees. So could you sign this form?
Okay.
Would you take one into your home now?
Right.
Like they don't have anywhere to go. Would you take them? And then they're going to be like, no.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, why'd you say we should bring them in then if you won't take them into your home? Oh, someone else is supposed to do it?
Right. People are always willing to give up other people's property, other people's rights, other people's freedoms. And then when it comes to their own, they're like, oh,
Well, you house a refugee then.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting.
You house this working age Afghanistan refugee in your house, okay?
Sounds like a good man on the street if I ever heard one. And I think I've heard one or two.
Yeah. So that's one of the ideas we had.
Well, good.
Yeah, it's a good idea, huh?
Yeah.
Tell me it's a good idea.
It's a good idea. Well, I thought I said that through my, I thought it was inferable from
what. No, I had to really hear it.
Well, it's a very good idea.
One more time.
Michael Riley.
Just kidding. Okay.
Michael Riley, Metal Mike doesn't mean to insult you, but you got a little Will Ferrell to you. Not sure if I spelled that right.
I wouldn't say that about Omelette, to be honest. That's not very nice of you.
I do take that to heart. I am offended, and I will be crying after this show.
Good.
Although I do have a feeling it was not directed at me, but I'll still take the hit.
I kind of have that sense of humor, I guess, a little bit.
Mm-hmm. You do, definitely.
Yeah.
It's definitely
Will Ferrell humor?
Sometimes.
Like Step Brothers?
I don't know which Will Ferrell. I'm trying to think of which Will Ferrell I think you have. Almost like D'Angelo in The Office, to where he's just like very blunt and straightforward.
Who's D'Angelo?
Remember when Will Ferrell's in The Office and he's like
juggler? Yeah.
Yeah, D'Angelo.
Oh, okay. I didn't remember his name.
Yeah, he's like very blunt, very straightforward, and sometimes it's funny, you know.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just really awkward for everyone. No, that sounds just like me.
That's accurate. One more here from Don Belmore. The only speech that needs to be protected is hate speech. Nobody cares about speech that is accepted by everyone. It is only that which is offensive to someone that needs to be protective. That's great. Really true. That's a very interesting assertion to make, and not something that a lot of people think about, is that really no other forms of speech are really under attack other than what people deem to be hate speech. So of course that needs to be protected.
Right.
Yeah. Great job, Don. Mm-hmm. You should be on the show.
Yeah.
Now we're gonna
get
into.
You guys
want
to leave a super chat and tell me that was a good idea?
Oh yes.
Feel free.
I will read it out loud so that Will can get more affirmations. That's his love language, his words of affirmation. So
that is actually trying to think.
It's got to be partially. I think everybody's.
Yeah, I feel like all the love languages are everyone's love
language. But what's your top one?
Money, probably.
That's gifts. Okay, so gift giving.
No, not gifts. Money.
Money is a gift. Of money. It's gift giving, acts of service, words of affirmation, physical touch, quality time. Oh my
gosh. Definitely not quality time.
I should be a therapist. Not quality time?
Not quality time.
Wow, you're like, I'll go and do my own thing?
No.
Okay.
Because I would probably say words of affirmation, which I think has to be everyone. I know, but you said it in a joking way. I have to say in a real way.
Okay.
I think
words of affirmation is yours, not acts of service or anything like that.
No, I like to do acts of service.
Okay.
That's my thing. I'm an acts of service type of person.
Right. But, so I've deduced.
But I want someone to tell me nice things about me.
Okay. Don't we all?
And then I'll love them.
Pajo says that he means Ron Burgundy. You have the mustache for it.
Oh yeah. Yes. Oh yeah. Definitely. Yeah, I go for that. Thank
and
you.
And John Frey also sent us a super chat. Thank you, John.
Thanks, John.
Now let's get through this Throwback Thursday as quickly as we can. Hopefully with no sidetracks. But this is. I chose for my Throwback Thursday. You probably saw me mention this if you were listening to the live last week. I sort of spoiled it a little bit, but it's going to be Thomas Jefferson's inaugural speech. Woo. Oh my gosh. Sounds so interesting.
We have an exclusive video.
An exclusive recording. We have an exclusive interview with Thomas Jefferson himself. He's on the show. No. I chose four really pertinent quotes from this inaugural speech. I encourage you to look it up and read all of it. It is brilliant. It is great. But I chose four quotes that I feel like pertain to the time that we're in right now. Quote number one, I avail myself of the presence of that portion of my fellow citizens which is here assembled to express my grateful thanks for the favor with which they have pleased to look toward me. To declare a sincere consciousness that the task is above my talents and that I approach it with those anxious and awful presentiments which the greatness of the charge and the weakness of my powers so justly inspire. Now, what I feel is so just ever present in this entire inaugural speech is his humility as a man and his gauge of what it truly means to be president of the United States. Now, statements that really pop out in this quote to me is the fact that he says the task is above my talents. And I think anybody who's entering public service or any sort of candidacy or Senate seat, whatever the case may be, you should realize that the task is truly above your talents. To govern a society of people or even play a part in governing a society of people is an immense task that is far beyond any of our capabilities. We take it on because the seat's there and because we have an obligation to do so and to try. But now, so often, politicians enter these seats and say, well, this is not above my talents. I'm more talented than this. I could do more than I'm doing right now for the Senate. I could be president. I could run the entire free world. When, of course, no human
is perfectly capable of doing such a thing. So his acknowledgement of that and saying that he's approaching this position with not only anxiety, but just like an awful presentiment of knowing what's ahead of him and all the greatness that he's meant to fulfill without making mistakes. And that's just an amazing acknowledgement that we so rarely hear in politicians.
It is. It's really good.
Nothing to add?
I thought this was your segment.
I don't know. I thought I was going to go through the four quotes and maybe push it over to you for some commentary, but...
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Thanks.
Let's go to the next one. I'll have more to say about the next one.
Okay. This is the second quote from another paragraph. All, too, will bear in mind the sacred principle that though the will of the majority is in all cases to prevail, that will be rightful must be reasonable, that in the minority possesses their equal rights, which equal law must protect, and to violate would be oppression. Let us then, fellow citizens, unite with one heart and one mind. Let us restore to social intercourse that harmony and affection without which liberty and even life itself are but dreary things. So in this one, there's just so much, again, beautiful sentiments in this speech. Go and read it. But he talks about that even though he was elected by a majority, there is still a very prominent minority present in American society, and they possess equal rights, and that nobody should ever infringe on the equal rights that which the majority and the minority share. And right now in America, we are doing that. We have a majority who has elected somebody who is trying to enforce their will upon the minority and to strip them of their rights, their right to speak, their right to assemble, their right to do anything with their bodies. And he says the most important part of this is that America has one heart and one mind, which I feel we've lost as well. We don't operate on a unanimous love for God and country anymore. We operate on a love for our own values and our own thoughts and our own personal truth. So we no longer operate with that one heart and one mind mentality. And he says if we lose that sort of compassionate love for each other and for country within our society, that the social intercourse that he speaks of, what does life and liberty even mean if you don't have that? They become nothing but dreary things. So, oh, so well written.
Anyways. There are no more shared values.
No, there's not.
Everyone has their own set of truths or subjective truth that are their values.
Right.
There's no American values. There's no values of the Bible, anything like that. It is now my values, and that's what's most important to people. So you can't have a cohesive society when everyone's values come from directly within themselves instead of from, you know, a higher power or whatever it is. So we've lost that, and it's a tragedy.
Yeah, there's much to be learned from the great men of our past who operated with the humility and the true vision of what America was meant to be and how large the undertaking was, and still tried to express that and as best they could in words to the American people. Next quote. This is 3 out of 4. These principles form the bright constellation which has gone before us and guided our steps through an age of revolution and reformation. The wisdom of our sages and blood of our heroes have been devoted to their attainment. They should be the creed of our political faith, the text of civic instruction, the touchstone by which to try the services of those we trust. And should we wander from them in moments of error or of alarm, let us hasten to retrace our steps and to regain the road which alone leads to peace, liberty, and safety. Now, this immediately reminds us of what we're going through right now with COVID-19, not only in America, but all over the world, is that we've allowed error, which is misinformation and falsehoods and propaganda from our media, and alarm, which is fear-mongering and just this fear of death and just being scared to go out and live life, to come to the forefront of our minds and be the guiding light for all that is good and all that is just and, of course, that is wrong. And when you do that, he writes, it leads to a road that is devoid of peace, of liberty, and of safety. So in an effort now to keep safety as much as we can and get the best grasp on it as we can, as dictated by our government and by the CDC and by all of these elites, we have truly lost safety, and we've lost our minds, and we've lost our hearts, and we've lost our liberty. So great quote. Anything to add, Will?
I thought it was beautiful. This is your segment.
Okay, one more here.
I don't
want to
take away from you. I'll talk on the last one. I only talk on even numbered.
Okay, one more and then we'll wrap up here.
Relying then on the patronage of your goodwill, I advance with obedience to the work, ready to retire from it whenever you become sensible how much better choice it is in your power to make. And may that infinite power which rules the destinies of the universe lead our counsels to what is best and give them a favorable issue for your peace and prosperity. And this is a sentiment that Thomas Jefferson and George Washington both shared, is that I'm in this space for a time. And it is not to usurp all power. It is not to become a king. It is not to become Your Highness, which is actually a battle that they had of what should the president be called, Your Highness, and that's something they decided not to do because they didn't want him to have the air or the power of a king. And he says, when you've decided that it's my time to retire, I will bow out because you know that somebody else can do this job better than I can, and you know that this job is far beyond what I will ever be as a man, and that's going to be what's most favorable to your peace and prosperity. And keeping in mind that I am but a man, and that God rules over all, although he refers to God as whatever the infinite power may be, and that is who truly leads the councils of the universe and who truly governs.
Yeah, knowing that people are better off through their own liberty, through their own individuality, than by him leading over them. He knows that they will be better off themselves making their own choices than by having him control every aspect of their life. And that's a really big deal, because people in politics today think that, oh, I am responsible for making these people's lives better. And it's like, no, what you are supposed to be doing is giving people the most amount of freedom so that they can live their lives and protecting their rights through your governmental power. That's what you should be really doing. So
yeah,
great. Amala, you did a great job for Throwback Thursday.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it wasn't mine.
Thank you, Will.
Yeah, it was good.
But yeah, go read his inaugural speech. It's just a message of humility and obedience to the people. And as he says in this last quote, obedience to the work, which again is not something that politicians have anymore. They're obedient to nobody, and they don't care. And there's no accountability. And to have a politician, albeit from so long ago, talk about how accountable he wants to be held and how he can only hope to get through his office and his sit at the top without making any mistakes is just a beautiful thing that I fear that we've lost. But the sentiment is still alive, because you can go and read it and you can sort of internalize that. So do so.
Please do.
And that's it.
Wow.
That's the end of my segment.
It was a great segment.
Thank you guys for having me on.
What do you mean having you on?
It's been great working here.
Yeah, now you're fired. Segment wasn't good enough.
I'm here all week, ladies and gentlemen.
That was really good. It was very good.
Well, that's it, guys. Today, we talked about Australia and a social credit score. We talked about the difference between Afghanistan feminism and westernized feminism. We talked about Thomas Jefferson and his inaugural speech. And we had a beautiful guest by the name of Erica Jimenez from EV Magazine. If you want to purchase EV Magazine and get their print, which is coming out soon, go to evprint.com. And you can go ahead and pre-order that. Please like, subscribe, click the notification bell to be notified every single day when we go live at 2:30 PST, 5:30 Eastern. And hopefully you actually get a notification on your phone when you do that. But if you want to listen to us, go to Google Play, Spotify, Apple Podcast, leave us a 5-star review so that other people get to hear what we have to say. Sometimes it's smart. Most of the times, I think.
Sometimes it's smart, sometimes it's fart. That's how it goes.
And thank you guys so much for listening. We will be back tomorrow.
Fun Friday tomorrow. See you guys.
Bye.